So, I was looking at this statistic earlier, and it blew my mind. Over a third of psychologists are reporting that their clients are currently bringing a chatbot's advice into their actual in-person therapy sessions.
Yeah, that is just, it's a wild number to think about.
Right. Like, just let that sink in for a second. We aren't waiting for some, I don't know, distant sci-fi future where machines analyze our childhood trauma.
No, absolutely not. The machines are literally already sitting on the therapy couch today.
Exactly. And that reality brings us to our mission for you today. Welcome to today's deep dive. Pull up a chair because you are the essential third person in this room. And today we're cutting through the massive amount of noise surrounding a very modern dilemma.
The very messy dilemma.
Very messy. Basically, when conversational AI starts, putting on a cardigan and asking how that makes you
Yeah.
feel, who actually regulates it?
Right.
And more importantly, how do they do it without accidentally breaking the entire mental health care system in the process?
Because it is an absolute regulatory minefield out there right now. I mean, the technology has just evolved so much faster than the legal frameworks we use to govern healthcare.
Totally, which is exactly why today's stack of notes is so critical. We are looking at a late June 2026 edition of a newsletter called Conversational AI Watch.
Written by Jess Jessup.
Right, Jess Jessup.
Yeah.
And it chronicles this very specific, intense week where lawmakers finally, stopped dragging their feet and actually took swings at regulating AI therapists.
Yeah, they really went for it. But before we get into the actual laws, we really need to talk about the source itself.
We do.
Because critical thinking is just paramount here. So Jessup's newsletter is this excellent, highly detailed piece of reporting, and it draws directly from statutory text and public statements. However, it is sponsored by a company called Clinician Assist Inc.
Right. And what exactly is Clinician Assist Inc. building? Because that matters.
It matters a lot. They build what's known as Therapist in the Loop AI software.
Okay, therapist in the loop.
Yeah. Meaning they design AI tools that are specifically intended to be used under the direct active supervision of a licensed human therapist.
Got it.
Now, the author does explicitly state they have no commercial relationship with the lawmakers mentioned, and the sponsors didn't review the issue before it ran.
Yeah.
But the newsletter argues pretty aggressively against sweeping bans that would, outlaw these exact types of supervised tools.
Right, it's a very specific angle.
Exactly. So, acknowledging this commercial context just makes you, our listener, a smarter consumer of information. It sharpens our understanding of why certain metaphors might be chosen by the author.
Okay, let's unpack this because the central thesis we are exploring today is a fascinating paradox.
It really is.
The core argument here is that a bad law is actually worse than no law at all.
Yeah, which sounds counterintuitive.
Right. But it's this idea that a clumsy, panicked attempt to protect people can end up doing significantly more damage than the, completely unregulated technology it's trying to stop.
Yeah, and to see that paradox in action, we have to look at what happened in Rhode Island on June 22, 2026.
June 22. Okay.
Because they were the first state to attempt to solve this problem comprehensively.
Right. Senator Lori Urso and Representative Tina Spears, they basically looked at this wild west of chatbots diagnosing people, and they wrote a sweeping law.
A very sweeping law.
Yeah. They made it strictly unlawful to provide, advertise, or offer therapy unless it is conducted by a licensed human.
Which sounds good, right?
Exactly. On the surface, if I'm a voter, I might think, great, they saw a dangerous imposter bot and they outlawed it. Boom, done.
Problem solved.
But I'm looking at the actual text of Section 3C of this statute, and I honestly just don't understand how this functions in the real world.
Well, what's fascinating here is how the mechanics of the law completely disconnect from the mechanics of the technology.
Okay, break that down for me.
So, the intent of Section 3C was to stop imposters, right? But it doesn't draw the regulatory line at whether a human is supervising the AI. It draws the line at whether the machine is allowed to speak directly to a client in any form of therapeutic communication.
But wait, how does the state even define therapeutic communication? I mean, if I text my phone's voice assistant that I'm feeling overwhelmed and it says, I'm sorry to hear that, is that therapeutic communication?
According to this law, yes.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It literally bans an AI from offering basic emotional support, reassurance, or even just reflecting a person's thoughts back to them. If the AI detects an emotion, it's illegal.
That is wild. And this is where we have to understand how large language models or LLMs actually work, right?
Exactly.
Because this is what I wanted to ask you. Can you even separate empathy from a modern AI? Like, can you just turn it off?
Practically, No, you really can't. LLMs are not these rigid decision tree programs where you can simply delete the empathy line of code. They are probabilistic text predictors. They're trained on vast amounts of human
So
conversation.
they just sound human by default.
Exactly. If a user inputs, "I'm having a panic attack," the statistically most likely human-like response the LLM will generate includes empathetic markers.
It's going to say something like, take a deep breath.
Yeah. It will naturally output, "Take a deep breath, I'm here." To strip an LLM of anything resembling emotional support means fundamentally breaking its conversational ability altogether.
So Rhode Island wrote a law that just assumes you can easily toggle off the therapy switch on a language model.
Exactly. And more importantly, the law makes this interaction illegal regardless of human supervision.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Even if a licensed human therapist is monitoring the chatbot, reading every single interaction, and approving the AI's use as a supplementary tool for a consenting patient,
Wow.
it is a crime in Rhode Island.
I have to point out just how structurally absurd this architecture is. Like, if we imagine this in the physical world, it's like a city realizing there's a problem with grifters impersonating Michelin star chefs,
Okay,
right?
I like this.
So these fake chefs are serving dangerous raw chicken in an alleyway. But Rhode Island's approach to stopping the fake chefs isn't to arrest them for fraud, it's to ban ovens.
Ban ovens.
They just made the tool itself illegal. And sure, the alleyway grifters can't cook anymore, but you also just shut down every legitimate, safe restaurant in the city that was using an oven responsibly under a head chef.
That's a great way to put it.
The newsletter actually points out that Rhode Island aimed at a bot in a stolen white coat, but accidentally hit the nurse taking vitals right next to it.
Yeah, that analogy perfectly illustrates the real-world consequence here. Because for anyone listening who is building these tools or relying on them, this law effectively outlaws the therapist in the loop. It catches the honest, responsible tools in the exact same net as the dangerous, unsupervised imposters.
Meanwhile, what does this law actually allow the AI to do? Because they didn't ban AI in clinics entirely, right?
Why? No, it leaves only purely administrative back office bots. The machine can draft your clinical notes, it can book your appointments and process billing. It just can never utter a single supportive word directly to the human being.
Which is such a massive waste of the technology's potential.
It really is.
So, okay, if Rhode Island's approach is like a giant clumsy net that accidentally bans ovens, what is the alternative? Because how does a state actually target the dangerous actors without destroying the legitimate tools? We obviously can't just let autonomous bots run wild, diagnosing schizophrenia.
No, we definitely can't. And for the alternative, we look at Pennsylvania. Because during that exact same week in June, Governor Josh Shapiro faced the exact same problem with AI imposters. But he reached for a completely different instrument. He didn't write a sweeping new tech law. He didn't try to define therapeutic communication in legal code at all.
And here's where it gets really interesting. He used a law that has been on the books for over a century.
Precisely. He utilized the oldest foundational rule in medicine. You cannot practice without a license.
Wow. Simple.
Yeah, a chatbot, by the very nature of being a piece of software, does not hold a medical license.
So he activates his Secretary of State, Al Schmidt, who oversees the licensing boards. Let me see if I'm tracking the mechanics here.
Go for it.
Schmidt sets up a task force to treat a chatbot claiming to be a therapist exactly like a human hanging a fake medical diploma in their basement.
That is exactly how it operates.
That's brilliant.
The Pennsylvania Task Force simply decided that it is illegal to present yourself as a licensed healthcare professional and provide care if you aren't one. They set up mechanisms to take complaints specifically about unlicensed practice by AI.
Okay, but let me play devil's advocate for a second. It's just saying they don't have a license really enough.
What do you mean?
Like, what if the bot doesn't explicitly say, I am a licensed therapist, but it just acts exactly like one?
Well, that's where the enforcement gets nuanced, but the legal foundation remains solid. Pennsylvania is targeting the claim of expertise, not the underlying technology. So if an AI tool is working behind the scenes, helping a licensed human therapist summarize notes or draft coping strategies, and it never presents itself to the patient as a licensed professional, it is perfectly legal.
Because the licensed human is the one holding the shingle. The
Exactly.
human is taking the responsibility. The technology itself isn't a crime. The deception is the crime.
Correct. And the newsletter describes this as the difference between a net and a scalpel.
I like that.
Rhode Island's net catches everything, including the good tools. Pennsylvania's scalpel only cuts out the deception. It spares the therapist in the loop entirely.
Now, earlier we talked about being smart consumers of information.
Yeah, the bias checked.
Right. I have to point out that Clinician Assist Inc., the company sponsoring this newsletter, builds Therapist in the Loop software.
They do.
Obviously, they're going to love the scalpel metaphor because it conveniently keeps their exact business model completely legal.
Absolutely.
So I have to ask you, is Pennsylvania's approach actually safer for the public? Or is it just a really convenient narrative for software developers?
Honestly, it's a highly critical question to ask.
Yeah.
But if we look objectively at how state licensing boards function, the scalpel approach is generally far more enforceable.
Okay, why is that?
Because licensing boards already have massive infrastructure to investigate and penalize unlicensed practice. They have investigators, subpoena power, clear legal precedents.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. When you invent a brand new category like therapeutic communication, as Rhode Island did, you just invite years of constitutional challenges and jurisdictional confusion.
Right. Lawyers arguing over what a supportive text message means.
Exactly. So while the sponsor certainly benefits from Pennsylvania's approach, objectively, utilizing existing battle-tested legal frameworks is usually a much faster way to protect the public from immediate harm.
That makes a lot of sense. You don't need a panicked legislative rewrite that accidentally bans empathy if you just enforce the rules against fraud that have worked for 100 years.
Right.
But wait, does Pennsylvania just think old laws can handle everything? Because AI is fundamentally new.
No, and this is where Governor Shapiro showed a really nuanced understanding of the landscape.
Okay.
He recognized that while existing laws cover unlicensed practice, there are specific new gaps that do require new laws. He didn't just stop at the task force.
What else did he do?
He also proposed new regulations specifically targeting companion bots marketed to children.
Oh, wow. Why specifically children? What are the new rules doing there that the old laws couldn't?
Because a child might not understand the difference between a licensed professional and a friendly chatbot.
That is so true.
The existing fraud laws assume a consumer who can be deceived. So for children, Shapiro proposed strict age checks, mandated parental consent, and this is cute. He established a legal duty for the AI to immediately route the conversation to a human if a child starts talking about self-harm.
Okay, that is brilliant. That is the actual definition of targeted regulation. It addresses the novel feature of the technology, its potential to isolate a vulnerable minor in a mental health crisis, without banning the basic function of the software for adults.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, it shows exactly when existing authority is sufficient and when you actually need to write new code into the law books.
That is so fascinating. So we've seen how the politicians are trying to wrestle this beast. But what about the people actually sitting in the therapist's chair?
The clinicians?
Yeah. Because if a third of psychologists are seeing this tech walk into their offices, they must be panicking, right?
You would think so, but the reality on the ground is far more complex. The newsletter takes us to Dr. C. Vale Wright.
Okay.
She runs the Office of Healthcare Innovation at the American Psychological Association, the APA.
And what's her take on all this?
Well, her position represents what the author calls the hard middle.
The hard middle is never a comfortable place to be. I mean, you can't just blindly bless every piece of software Silicon Valley throws over the wall. But you also know you can't just ban it all like Rhode Island tried to do, because your own patients are already using it.
Precisely. Dr. Wright and the APA are looking at this situation and recognizing that the machines are already in the practice.
Yeah, the cat's out of the bag.
Exactly. Wow. The only question left is who is ultimately responsible for them. And this is where Dr. Wright draws the exact line that Rhode Island missed.
Okay.
She isn't trying to ban the technology. She is trying to furiously protect the word therapist.
Because that word actually means something. It represents, you know, over a century of establishing standards of care, ethical boundaries, and accountability.
Right.
But how does she differentiate between a dangerous chatbot and a useful clinical tool?
Right.
I mean, if the underlying large language model is basically the same, what makes one acceptable and one a threat?
It all comes down to clinical oversight and hard-coded guardrails.
Guardrails, okay.
Dr. Wright argues that a tool built with clinical oversight is responsible.
What does that actually mean in practice, though?
It means the software clearly tells the user what it is and what it is not. It means the developers have hard-coded a refusal to officially diagnose anyone.
Oh, that's huge.
And crucially, it means the system has triggers to immediately hand a person in crisis over to a human professional.
So if it's integrated into a care plan, it's a tool. But a general-purpose chatbot, just dressed up in the language of a counselor, just freely analyzing you on a Tuesday night with no human in the loop.
That is deeply dangerous, because when that general purpose chatbot hallucinates, when it makes a probabilistic text prediction that happens to be incredibly harmful psychological advice, there is no licensed professional standing behind it to catch the error.
And the APA isn't just writing thought pieces about this, right? They actually took action on this front.
They did. They took this precise, careful distinction directly to the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC.
Nice.
They asked the federal government to investigate the imposters, the products actively posing as therapists, while leaving the honest, supervised tools alone.
So what does this all mean for the people on the front lines? Like, if I am a clinician listening to this deep dive right now, what is Dr. Wright's fundamental message to me?
Her message is incredibly pragmatic. Do not hide from the future.
I love that.
Walk into this new era with your credentials proudly on your chest. If a client brings a chatbot's advice into a session, don't scold them. Read it with them. Process it together.
Oh, so lean into it.
Yes, because you, the human clinician, are the oversight. You are the ultimate line of defense.
I really love that. It takes the fear out of it and replaces it with responsibility.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the grand synthesis of this whole chaotic week in June 2026. We saw three entirely different reactions to the exact same technological disruption.
We really did.
Rhode Island showed incredible nerve by being the first to act, but they reached for a clumsy net, banned the oven, and now they desperately need to edit their law before they drive all the ethical companies out of their state.
And then you have Pennsylvania showing precise aim. They used existing licensing laws to act as a scalpel, cutting out the deception while protecting the innovation.
Right.
And finally, you have the psychologists at the APA showing necessary restraint, inviting federal regulators to target the fakes while actively teaching their members how to safely incorporate the supervised tools.
And this connects directly back to you, the listener. Because whether you are a software engineer coding the next big AI model, or a state regulator trying to draft policy, or honestly just a person navigating a really stressful world and seeking some mental health support, you have to understand the fundamental difference between a shingle and a stethoscope.
That's a great analogy.
Right. A shingle is the claim of expertise. It's a promise on the door that says, I am a doctor, I am bound by ethics, and I am accountable to a board.
Mm.
A stethoscope is just a tool used by that expert to do their job better.
And banning the stethoscope because someone in an alleyway used one to impersonate a doctor is terrible policy.
It really is.
As we've seen throughout this deep dive, a bad law truly is worse than no law. Because if you write legislation so broad that you ban the responsible tools that keep a human in the loop, you force the ethical companies to pull out of your state.
Right.
And who does that leave the field wide open for? The predatory actors, the rule breakers, the people who never cared about your laws in the first place.
It creates a massive vacuum,
and
the worst actors will always rush in to fill it. It's an incredibly fascinating regulatory puzzle.
It definitely is.
But looking at all of this leaves me with a final, slightly uncomfortable thought.
Uh-oh.
Something that wasn't in Jessup's newsletter, but it feels like the inevitable next chapter of this story. Because right now, all of our elegant solutions, Pennsylvania's task force, the APA's complaint to the FTC, they all rely heavily on this one concept, the licensed professional.
Right.
The human license is our gold standard. It is our ultimate shield against the AI imposters.
It is, which raises a profound question about the future of that standard.
Exactly. Because what happens in 3, maybe 5 years when the AI systems aren't just faking it anymore?
Yeah.
What happens when an AI model can actually sit down and pass the state psychological licensing exams with vastly higher scores than the human applicants?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
What happens when a tech company can demonstrate clinical outcomes from an AI that are statistically better, safer, and more reliable than the average human therapist?
It's a scary thought for a lot of people.
If our entire legal and moral defense right now is simply you cannot practice without a license, what on earth do we do when the machine objectively earns one?
Right.
Will a human license still be the ultimate gold standard of care, or will we have to completely redefine what it means to be a professional in the first place?
That is the horizon we are rapidly approaching. I mean, the laws we are debating today in Rhode Island and Pennsylvania are just the warm-up act.
Definitely something to mull over the next time the machine asks you how you're feeling. Thanks for diving deep with us.